Let me in. This is Sunday night's main event.
What do you guys want to talk about?
On the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
I'm better than you.
Tonight we have a chance to say, yeah, you're right. We're too extreme. We're too wild. We're too out of control. We're too full of our own.
I take pride in calling a stooge, you stooge. Yeah.
Acknowledge me.
It's Sunday, and you know what that means. I'm Boris Roberto Aguilar. Welcome you to Canada's Premier Wrestling Radio Show, Sunday Night's Main Event, powered by The Law, Live Audio Wrestling. Join Brady Whittem and Chris Tidwell as they navigate through the world of pro wrestling and MMA, and you can listen to them on Sunday Night's Main Event Podcast Network. Just search for Sunday Night's Main Event on your favorite podcasting app. This show is always free across the country on TSN Radio and the iHeartRadio News Talk Networks and through several affiliate stations across this beautiful land. And there are a few ways that you can help support the show. First off, you can buy some Sunday Night's Main Event merch over at Chopped Tees. That's chopped-tees.com. And you can buy some shirts not only from Sunday Night's Main Event, but Post Wrestling, Poison Rana, WrestleNomics, and so much more. Another way that you can help support the show is by becoming a family member, and for that all you need to do is go to patreon.com/snmeradio, and for $5 a month you get to become part of the family. What does this give you? Well, it gives you exclusive access to the after party call line. It gives you access to trivia, and at the end of the year all of the patrons are going to be getting a little something something as a thank you. Also, you can find us on all of the social medias, Instagram, X, etc., etc. And you can find us at the @SNMEradio username. And we're more than just a weekly radio show. In fact, we have a show that comes out each and every single week that navigates the world of wrestling. And if you want to listen to the entire Motley crew and cast of characters that this podcast network has to offer, you can just search for Sunday Night's Main Event on your favorite podcasting app. And just, you'll be able to listen to Raw reviews, SmackDown reviews, MLW reviews, The Law, this show in its entirety, because remember, the radio only has 1 hour, and the podcast version, we have more. So all you need to do, like I said, is go to your favorite podcasting app and search for Sunday Night's Main Event. What a week it has been in wrestling. We have the WrestleMania fallout and essentially a new season starting over in WWE. We are getting new contenders for the World Heavyweight and WWE titles. And over in AEW, well, they decided to air the All-In footage. Did this help the company or did this hinder the company? Well, joining me and making his return to the radio waves is Big Daddy Don, Donnie Da Silva. He'll be chatting with me, and we're going to be talking about all of the big things that happened this week in both WWE and AEW. You're not going to miss this discussion because Donnie, well, he's got opinions. Also joining us on the show with someone who has a lot to say and being interviewed by The Law's Chris Tidwell is Eric Young. That's right. Eric Young is going to be joining us this week on the show. And then we are going to be previewing AEW Dynasty, which is happening on April 21st. And just remember, you'll be able to catch the AEW Dynasty After Party live on X, Facebook, and YouTube, hosted by Matthew and Aaron Grant. For all of that, just go to the Facebook group and you'll be able to find all of the information. Or you can just go directly to YouTube, hit subscribe, and you'll get a reminder when the show goes live right after the pay-per-view. So with all this and so much happening, let's get to the news of the week.
I'm afraid I've got some news.
Triple H has indicated that there will be even more production and presentation changes coming soon, and word is they are completely abandoning the sports entertainment branding going forward. In regards to the production side of things, you may have noticed the smaller sets that they typically use on PLE weekends, these are going to be the norm sets being used moving forward in favor of having more fans going to the shows, well, and also cutting back on presentation. Also, word is that the augmented reality that they use for a lot of superstars' entrances are going to be cut, and that this past Friday's edition of SmackDown is the last time that we are going to be seeing a lot of these augmented reality elements in the weekly shows. All of this is in favor to lowering the budget on production. But you know what? I think that this will make the shows look better in the grand scheme of things. Sometimes, you know, just having a more basic approach, that more sports approach, is going to get hit the home run. So we'll see what happens moving forward with the way that WWE looks and feels. Over the past week, Endeavor entered into a 2-stock purchase agreement with former WWE Chairman Vince McMahon, which will see the company purchase a total of 3.5 million of McMahon's shares in TKO for about $311.2 million US dollars. Both sales are set to close within the next few days. The transactions mark the third significant dispositions of TKO stock by McMahon in recent months, and second since the news of allegations against him by a former employee were presented in court. It should also be noted that apparently Vince McMahon has put the rest of his TKO stock on the market. This is significant, as this could lead to Vince McMahon having absolutely no ties or connection to WWE. What a world. Triple H had this to say about the reappearance of Stephanie McMahon during WrestleMania weekend. "So great to have her back home. I get her home all the time, but to have her back here, to see the doubt leave her by being here for the last few days, to see her confidence come back, and to know that this is her home. All of you, all of us, all this business, it's her home, and as much as anybody on the planet, she belongs here, and hopefully she knows that now. So happy to have her back." It's also being reported that Stephanie McMahon is going to be re-entering the WWE corporate side in some shape, way, or form. You may have noticed on Raw during a Bronson Reed backstage interview, the screen flickered and there appeared to be a technical glitch in the video. Some online sleuths suggested that this could be teasing the return of Alexa Bliss, as it was similar to some of the breadcrumbs dropped right around the time of Bray Wyatt's return. This could also signify the return of Uncle Howdy, because for those of you who watched the Bray Wyatt documentary, we got a post-credit scene, and in the post-credit scene, it appears that Uncle Howdy is coming back. Is this Alexa Bliss? Is this Uncle Howdy? Is this Eric Rowan? He was recently pulled from some indie bookings because of contractual obligations. Well, we're going to have to watch WWE TV to find out who's coming back. GCW is coming back to Toronto on July 5th, and they're going to be having a live event at the Opera House. Tickets and more info coming over the next few weeks. After being in Philadelphia for WrestleMania weekend, word is that Rossi Ogawa, former president of Stardom, will be announcing his new promotion very, very soon. There are some changes happening at WWE Corporate. The executive vice president of talent relations, Don Vitrell, is no longer with the company. Chris Legentil from communications and Matthew Altma from marketing will be adding talent relations to their duties. All talent development and recruiting employees will now be reporting to Shawn Michaels. Also, WWE Senior Vice President of Athlete ID and Development, Trent Wilfinger, is also gone from the company. Additionally, PW Insider is reporting that longtime WWE employee Sue Atchison has been let go by the company. Atchison had been with WWE for nearly 40 years and was the main driver behind WWE's relationship with Make-A-Wish organization, one of the reasons she was awarded the Warrior Award as part of the 2019 WWE Hall of Fame. On Friday night in Chicago, New Japan Pro Wrestling held an event at the Wintrust Arena, and in the main event, Jon Moxley defeated Tetsuya Naito to win the IWGP World Heavyweight Championship, and this all happened at Windy City Riot. He becomes the first person to ever win the WWE, AEW, and NJPW World Championships. We're going to be taking a short break here on TSN Radio and the iHeartRadio News Talk Networks. And on the other side, Big Daddy Donnie Da Silva is going to be joining me. And we're going to run through some of the big headlines and we're going to give our thoughts and opinions. And if you know Big Daddy Don from the early days of live audio wrestling, The Law, then you know that opinions will be had. So you're going to want to keep it locked in here. And then later on, Eric Young joins the show and we preview AEW Dynasty. So stay tuned for all of that here on Sunday Night's Main Event.
From pillar to post and coast to coast, this is Sunday Night's Main Event on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Are you in the market for a used vehicle for your family or business? North Toronto Auction hosts public auctions twice a month, and everyone's invited. Hundreds of cars, trucks, SUVs, commercial vehicles, and heavy equipment are available. Plus, travel trailers, motorcycles, snowmobiles, ATVs, and more. View the entire selection at NorthTorontoAuction.com. Bid online or bid in person. Bid on items from government agencies, financial companies, fleet managers, car dealers, and public consignors. For more information, visit us online at NorthTorontoAuction.com.
This is Sunday Night's Main Event on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Hey, we are back here on Sunday Night's Main Event on TSN Radio and the iHeartRadio News Talk Network. It's a new era in WWE, and it has been quite the week of television for both AEW and WWE. So that is what we're going to talk about here. We're going to be bringing in someone from the past. I've had to look far and deep and bring someone back to the show so that they can chat some wrestling. We can joining me for the first time on Sunday Night's Main Event is Donnie Da Silva, a godfather of podcasting. Donnie, welcome to Sunday Night's Main Event.
Hey, how's it going, Boris? This is a lot of fun, man. It's nice to be on TSN Radio. It's nice to be on Sunday Night's Main Event. I'm somewhat familiar with this concept of wrestling radio, so we'll just have some fun with it.
How do you know wrestling radio, and why are you considered a godfather of podcasting?
Boris is going to make me pat myself on the back, even though a pat on the back is only 18 inches from a kick in the pants. So I started doing wrestling radio way back in the day. If you really want to put a number on it, it was 1996. My buddy Chris Tidwell and I, I had the opportunity, thanks to my good pal, George Strombolopoulos, Jeff Merrick, and Bob Makowitz, they all got themselves a gig working at an internet radio station, the first of its kind, going back to 1996. And they were trying to find people to come in and work cheap and who wanted to host shows of all sorts of types. They had music shows of every genre. They had talk shows of every type. They had, you know, morning variety shows, sports shows for every sport under the sun. And they came to me and said, "Hey, could you host a wrestling show?" And I said, "Hey, I think I could." And they said, "Do you want to co-host?" And I said, "Yeah, maybe." So I went and found my buddy Chris Tidwell, who at the time we were working as bouncers at a nightclub in Toronto. I literally just found him on the street and said, "Hey, follow me. We're going to a radio station. I'm going to put you on the air." "Okay." And so that's what we did. And that show that we started hosting became The Law Live Audio Wrestling, which eventually became this show, right? I mean, in a roundabout way,
yep.
That's kind of the circuitous route. And so I've been involved, and over the years, you know, since my time having departed from live audio wrestling, I've been involved with other wrestling projects, both in broadcasting and actually in the wrestling world behind the curtain. So I've had a lot of fun in this space for, you know, a long time. And all this really says, Boris, is that I'm old.
Right? That's exactly what I was thinking. I'm like, 28 years. That's how long this game has been going on. Donnie, welcome to the show. And you're going to be a mainstay, at least for now, till you say something wrong, till I get angry.
till I make someone mad.
Exactly. All right, let's get to business. Let us talk about WWE first, WrestleMania this past weekend. Last weekend, did it live up to your expectations?
That's a great question. And I say it's a great question because my expectations for WrestleMania 40 were pretty high. I remember talking to you about this ahead of time and saying, I kind of feel like WrestleMania 40 is going to be really good. And I made a comment earlier this week. I sat down with Brady and Chris Tidwell on Live Audio Wrestling, and they were asking me about WrestleMania 40. And I said, and they said, you know, how do you rank it overall, right? And I said, you know what? To me, at this stage, when you're deciding how good is this in the pantheon of all WrestleManias, you really have to break it down into two categories. There's the era of the single night WrestleManias, and then there's the double night WrestleManias. I find it really hard to compare WrestleMania X7 and WrestleMania 40. It's just so hard because there's so much more content on a two-night show, which means also more chances for things to go wrong. There's a lot more happening. And then when you do pull it off, you deserve extra kudos because you pulled off so much more. Of the two-night WrestleManias, I think 40 was the best. You know, a lot of people felt like WrestleMania 40 night one wasn't that strong. I humbly disagree. I think it was a very solid night of professional wrestling. I think WrestleMania Night 2 was fantastic. I think the main event, now there is recency bias, but I think the main event, eventually when we look back on it, will go down as the best main event in WrestleMania history. And I'm not just saying that because of the story. The story was tremendous, but it's the full gamut. It's the story. It's the work. The work was excellent in that match. It's the cameos, and people go, oh, it was overbooked. It wasn't overbooked. It was perfectly booked because every single appearance made sense to the story. And then ultimately, the reason I say I think it's the best main event ever is because it drew the most. And ultimately, that's the one metric that all wrestlers and wrestling promoters can point to. What did it draw? And it drew the most. So when you put all that together, best main event ever.
That's exactly it, right? You can't deny the fact that this was good business. And I've seen the argument WrestleMania just isn't the same now that it's two nights. Donnie, let's talk about this. And let's just set the record out there.
WrestleMania never going back.
It's never going back. Be one night.
No, it's never going back. Like, you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube at this point. You know, you went down this path and they decided to say, you know, and I believe it was 2020, right? It was the COVID year that they decided to do the double nights. And at the time I thought, maybe this is just a 1 year thing because of COVID and they're trying to give more. And then I was like, no, they saw something. I think that 2020 year was a trial balloon and they wanted to see, will this work? Will people actually watch two nights of, and they did. So now it's like, there's no going back. That's double the revenue. That's double the ticket sales. That's double the everything, right? Double the spot. Almost every single match had a sponsor. What? That's crazy money when you think about it. Crazy money. No, they're never going back.
No way in heck. So let's talk about the booking of the two-night WrestleMania. What I really enjoyed about this year's WrestleMania is that there was a story kind of through both nights, and they did a great job of leaving us in suspense after the main event when the Bloodline won. And it's like, now what is next? Can Seth Rollins defend his title? What is Cody? What adversity is Cody going to be up against? And I absolutely love that story because it got you thinking throughout the entire night, throughout the day, and into the show, what is going to happen next?
Yeah, and I will say, look, if I have to nitpick and talk about any issue I may have had, it's the fact that when I did a WrestleMania pre-event conversation on the Godfathers of Podcasting, I kind of did lay that out exactly how it was going to go down. And I said, I think Roman Reigns and The Rock will win on night one with The Rock pinning Cody. And I think on night two, after a bunch of shenanigans, Cody will beat Rock. And the only thing I got wrong is I said, none of the people running in should touch Roman. And I still stand by that. That's what should have happened. Cena ended up giving him his finish, but there was enough time between when that happened and the actual end of the match. I mean, from the time Cena picked up Roman and dropped him, Roman actually got up and then Superman punched Seth Rollins, who tried to make his own save, right? So there was enough time to, you can't look at this as a fan and go, well, Roman only lost because John Cena went in and hit. Well, no, there was enough recovery time. But that all being said, I would have loved it if maybe they worked me a little and I didn't quite read the tea leaves so clearly. But you know what? Sometimes the obvious booking is the right booking.
That's exactly what I was going to say. You're a step ahead of me right now. Might be this cold that sometimes the obvious booking is the right booking. And if I can still be sports entertained with the obvious booking, you know that company did a great job. And for me, that's just another notch for WWE where I knew we called it. Like, we have been talking about this for weeks and weeks and weeks. And it happened exactly, almost exactly how we had anticipated. And we still had fun.
It doesn't bother me either that much, right? When I know in my head what I think the finish is going to be and it plays out that way because, and I'll draw a parallel, even though it's not nearly on the same scale, and I'm never going to pretend that it is. But for 20-something years, Boris, as you know, I've been involved in booking of independent wrestling shows for various promotions. And when I put together an event, I know who's going to win. I know the finishes because I wrote them. Right. And when I watch the show, I'm not sitting there going, this isn't fun because I already know who's going to win. I want to see the vision come to fruition. I want to see it play out in the ring because no matter what the writer, the booker, the promoter comes up with, you give so much to the talent and then they're going to bring it to life. So you want to see what they do with it. And I thought they did a masterful job.
Yep. Let's talk about what your expectations are for WWE moving forward in this new era. What does Donnie think is going to happen? What does he expect? Let's hear it.
It's really hard to say because right now they're in this interesting space where, you know, Cody, there's so much energy and production has gone into he has to finish the story, right? But now what? There is no clear cut next guy up for Cody. The guy that came out and confronted him on Raw this week was The Rock, who told him, bye-bye, I'm leaving for a while. You know, for a second when The Rock's music hit, I thought, oh, maybe he's going to make trips back and forth from filming The Smashing Machine, the new movie that he's doing, and he's going to make a couple of appearances on TV, and he's going to show up at Backlash and take on Cody, or maybe they're going to start teasing a SummerSlam match. I don't know, but clearly that's not the direction. We don't currently have any idea who Cody's going to be working in France. There's rumors that are out there, but there's nothing that's been officially announced, right? So we have to see where that direction is and where they're going to go with it. We do know what's happening with Drew McIntyre. Oh, excuse me, not with Drew McIntyre, with Damian Priest. You know, he'll be facing Jey Uso, which, you know, rightly or wrongly, I think it makes a lot of sense. Jey is super over, and Damian has to prove his mettle as a new top guy. I think that there is that reset period that often happens after WrestleMania where it's like, okay, now we have to gear up some new stories and fast because there's, you know, you could point to Chad Gable and Sami Zayn, but other than that, there's not a lot of stuff that you look at automatically coming out of WrestleMania and you say, well, that's automatic, right? It's a lot of, We have to churn. We have to create. So that could make the next couple weeks of television very exciting because I don't think a Triple H wants to go into France with an ice cold card. I think he wants to get some stuff going. So we'll see.
That's exactly it. I think that this is an excellent time to bring up that world heavyweight title and elevate that title. Kind of, I'm not going to say Cody take a back seat, kind of be a secondary champ, but it's time for that world heavyweight title to get that prestige maybe.
I don't think the WWE title is ever going to take a backseat to any other belt. I don't think that's going to happen. Just because of the history, the lineage, everything else, this belt was manufactured last year, you know, for storyline reasons to put a belt on Raw for, you know, whatever. I think the one thing you can say, and Triple H talked about this in the post-WrestleMania press conference, is you make a new belt, you want to give it value, hand it to a guy like Seth Rollins and let him carry it for a long time. And you know what? There were plenty of times during his reign where I thought he should drop it. He should drop it right here. I wanted him to make Nakamura. I wanted him to make several guys, right? I thought Drew McIntyre was going to win it a ways back. Now that they did the whole Money in the Bank cash in and Damian Priest has it, there's a lot of fans that are looking at this saying, okay, he's been carrying around this briefcase for almost a year, and I still don't buy him as a top guy. And don't know that they're doing Damian Priest any favors by putting him in with Jay, who, despite his moniker, has not established himself as a main eventer. So if they really wanted to get this over, it would be kind of like when The Miz was WWE champion, right? And they started throwing The Undertaker at him and John Cena and whoever, right? All their top guys to try and establish that, you know, they want you to believe in Miz. And that didn't even work. No one ever believed in Miz. But I think you need to throw some established guys at Damian Priest. I think the Jey Uso match will be fine, but I don't think that's the way to build him or that title.
All right, we're going to flip the page. I'm tired of talking about this, but we have to talk about this. It's the 8% gamble, as I'm going to talk about it, because ratings only went up 8% overall for AEW Dynamite this week. They pulled in 819,000 this week versus 752,000. Donnie, you're already laughing. You're already laughing. What's wrong?
I made a comment last weekend on social. It was the wee hours of the night after Collision, when everyone is buzzing from WrestleMania Night 1, and the news had broken that they were going to show this secret security footage from All In and show what CM Punk did. And, you know, it was positioned like this big expose. And of course, this comes on the heels of CM Punk's interview with Ariel Helwani, where he told his side of the story for the first time ever. So what did this big expose do? It corroborated everything that CM Punk said.
Exactly.
And what I said last weekend on social was, there is no good ending for this, for nope. AEW. If the footage makes Punk look like a jerk and look like a bully, then what? Then you have a bully who pushed around one of your guys and is gone. There's no payoff for you. If the footage makes Punk look like he wasn't that bad a guy, now you have egg on your face. And if the footage is somewhat inconclusive and you have to draw your own conclusions, then all it does is further cement the tribalism, and it further cements the people that go, this is weird. Why would you do this?
And Donnie, I think honestly, so, you know, Tony Khan has gone, you know, on tons of podcasts, said tribalism this, tribalism that. But I kind of feel like he literally threw a grenade into the tribalism fire this week by showing that footage, because he's like, look, we're the good guys, rah-rah AEW. And then on top of that, oh man, I'm getting fired up just thinking about this again. The three main points that stuck to me after AEW Dynamite went off the air was this. CM Punk justified. Triple H, he's still being made fun of by guys randomly with a joke that's 20 years old. And a Samoan named Joe faced the Rhodes in the main event.
Yeah, that was weird. So much for that ranking system, huh, Tony? You know, that's out the window. But aside from that, the whole secret footage thing, honestly, all it did was, there, if you remember, Boris, going back to when this story first happened and Tony Khan came out on Collision and announced that he had been afraid for his life, right? And the fans drew their own conclusion from that statement, right? The ones that sip the tea and believe everything that's put out there by the machine, the fans came out and said, oh, Punk got a hold of Tony Khan and he threatened to punch him and he got in his face and he must have roughed him up. None of that happened. Everything happened exactly the way Punk said. He shoved Jack Perry. He shoved Jungle Boy for getting a little mouthy. He shoved him away, like his line Chael Sonnen says. You know, when a guy gets too close, you got to back him up. And he pushed him off. Perry came back at him, and he put him in a guillotine real quick. And then Samoa Joe ran in within 3 seconds to break it up. They broke it up. And then the people who are watching saying, and then Punk tried to punch him and he hit him. No, he didn't. He did was he did one of these. He did like a fist pump, like, get out of here. And the reason you know it's a fist pump and not a punch is the angle of the arm. When your arm is traveling parallel to the ground, what are you hitting? You cannot throw a punch that way. This is a man who was trained how to throw punches. That's not how you throw punches. A punch comes like this, not swinging like this in a, that's not a punch. He knows how to throw a punch. So he was simply doing like one of these, like, hey, you get out of here. One of those deals. That's all it was. Yep. And you know what? Even if he did throw a punch, I still go back to what he said, which was, Tony, can you please be a boss and deal with this clown? And Tony did not address it. And, you know, there were multiple officials that were all standing around while this argument was happening between CM Punk and Perry. And no one did anything. They just all sat there listening to this happening. So either it was a very quiet conversation and it was not heated at all, or everyone ignored it and just did not care because there's no leadership.
If you look at the footage, the amount of people that are just staring and kind of just watching this happen, not even getting close, the only person who stepped in was Samoa Joe. Not even Chris Hero. Chris Hero just looked like, what the hell's going on? It was telling. And the part that made me laugh was as the Young Bucks are introducing this, they said they equated this to a schoolyard fight. Then you have the boss who tried to justify firing CM Punk because he was scared for his life. Like, everything about this just made AEW and Tony Khan in particular look foolish.
I don't know what the schools in Cucamonga are like, but the schools I went to, the schoolyard fights were a lot rougher than that. Let me tell you
something about Southern California. Once you leave LA, man, you know, don't steal their Fiji water or else.
Yeah, exactly. down in Cucamonga, I'm sure that it's I'm sure it's like the ghetto down there. But no, I'm not buying anything that they're selling. I'm not buying any of the spin. I think the whole thing makes them look extremely Bush League. And a lot of AEW devoted hardcore fans are now looking at this going, why did they do this? And the thing that's gone viral now is the facial reaction of Tony Schiavone when they came back from that bit. And he looks like he's having PTSD, like, oh my God.
Not this again.
This is just like 2000. Yep. Here we go, you know, because he watched a great company fall apart at the seams. He watched it in World Championship Wrestling, and he's seeing signs of it right now. And that is a big, big miss on their part. And the other big miss, you alluded to it, was, you know, Will Ospreay, man, did he feel triggered by something Triple H said? Because Triple H never said his name when he was asked a question, right, about free agents that went to the other team, right? He was addressing a question. He didn't come out and just start ripping on guys. He was addressed a question. He said, when I hear about guys that choose to go somewhere else because they're going to get less dates, I just think they're not ready for the grind. How do you argue with that sentiment?
What I love is that WWE, even if it's a veiled shot at AEW, they never do it on their main show. They'll do it on podcasts. They'll do it on pre-shows. They'll do it around their actual TV. Whereas AEW literally sold us on, we're going to make fun of CM Punk. This is going to make him look foolish.
Don't agree with wasting TV time to do something that's going to get your audience cheering for the guy that works for the company.
When you have how many wrestlers on your roster in catering because there's no TV time for them somehow. Like, I just don't understand how they use their TV time. Why, at what point they thought this was so important to air that they're going to take two segments of their TV show for this?
I have a friend of mine who did some math the other day, and he said that between the AEW proper and the Ring of Honor roster, there are more than 240 contracted talents.
Ooh.
Even at its height, WCW never had half that number. Okay. And that is an insane number of people. So when you talk about they don't have time to get people on TV, first of all, they got way too many people to manage. Like, and then you hear the fans go, well, they need to do a brand split. That's not going to solve the problem because you still only got
the time.
Yeah, you're splitting the time, and then you got what, six matches on one show, maybe five or six on another. And you got to stop with this mentality of 20-minute match, 20-minute match, 20-minute match, 20-minute match, 20-minute match. You got to have some continuity. You got to have some storytelling. And I'm not talking about everything has to have a goofy angle, but you got to give people a reason to care more so than, oh, this guy was really good in Japan. I really liked him. You know, I had people contact me today, Boris, and say, you know what I want to have happen now because of that Will Ospreay promo? WWE should agree to a Forbidden Door event with AEW, and they can do Ospreay versus Rollins. And I'm like, how does that benefit the WWE? It doesn't. Yes, it would. You're an idiot. You don't know anything about wrestling. That would be a huge draw. No, would it be a huge? It's only a draw if the WWE puts the promotional machine behind Ospreay and educates the mainstream audience as to who the heck this guy is. Because the majority of mainstream casual fans don't have a clue. And they go, oh, wrestling fans know who he is. Look, when you want to draw a big number, when you want to sell out a stadium, not just an arena, a stadium, and then have millions watching, you need the casual fans to tune in, and they don't have a clue who this guy is.
Outside of the UK, sell a stadium outside of the UK.
Sure. I mean, look, you and I could go have a checkers match and sell at a venue in England. Like, they are just hungry for content. Okay.
Yep.
So, I mean, look, TNA used to, Jeff Jarrett talks about all the time, his best houses ever were when they went to England. You know, like, they are hardcore wrestling fans that don't get a lot of material. It'll be interesting to see if they sell out Wembley again. I suspect they will, but the company is ice cold right now. Like, they are ice cold.
It really is, Donnie. All right. Thanks for coming by. You're going to be back next week. We're going to be talking about all the highlights and the lowlights of the week that was pro wrestling with Donnie DaSilva. So with that said, we are going to be taking a quick break here on TSN Radio and the iHeartRadio News Talk Networks. And on the other side of this break, we are being joined by Eric Young as the Law's very own Chris Tidwell sits down with Eric Young. And we get some very, very, very interesting insights into his train of thought after leaving WWE, going back to TNA, and so much more. This is a cannot miss interview. So leave it locked in here on TSN Radio and the iHeartRadio News Talk Networks, and you're listening to Sunday Night's Main Event.
Chat wrestling all week long by joining the Sunday Night's Main Event group on Facebook. Just search SNME Radio.
This is Dax Xavier Josiah, the host of ACMG Presents Talk Time Live, the podcast. Talk Time Live is a show that talks about your favorite fandoms with the latest news, discussions, and interviews with some of the hottest names in all of anime, comics, movies, and games, such as...
This is Miley Flanagan, the voice of Naruto!
Hey there, this is Kyle Hebert, the voice of Gohan from Dragon Ball Super.
This is Stephanie Shea, the voice of Sailor Moon.
Visit TalkTimeLive.com and let us help you learn to let go, live life, and love all things ACMG.
Talk Live.
This is Sunday Night's Main Event on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
And we are back here on TSN Radio and the iHeartRadio News Talk Networks, and you're listening to Sunday Night's Main Event. Right now, we are going to be joined by Eric Young, and a huge thanks to Live Audio Wrestling's Chris Tedwell for conducting the interview earlier this week. You can listen to Live Audio Wrestling here on this very network by going to your favorite podcasting app and searching for Sunday Night's Main Event, because we're more than just this weekly show. We have Live Audio Wrestling, which is back, hosted by Chris Tedwell and Brady Whittem. We also have reviews for all of the major shows from major companies, opinions, interviews, and so much more. So once again, go to your favorite podcasting app and search for Sunday Night's Main Event. So without further ado, let us listen to Chris Tedwell talking with Eric Young.
All right. I want to get into this. Usually I do one of these intros. You hear the music and we go and go. But Eric, thank you so much for joining me, brother. How you been?
Yeah, pleasure. Taking me back to the old school, man. It's I think that's how me and you first met. And I know for sure that's how I met Jeff Merrick, who's still a very good buddy of mine. And when I tell people that's, you know, what he started doing, well, you know, years ago, people are like, no, he's, you know, he's been a hockey host forever. So yeah, but before that.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Wrestling wasn't a thing. You guys were doing it. So
because you were already training out at Waldo Von Erich's place and some other guy, I forget his name. And you were already doing your thing. And we came out there to do some promo stuff for them. And, you know, and so let's fast forward that a little bit, because that is where we met. And we kind of broke in right around the same time. And but then you went and you left there and started your own facility, your own training. I don't want to call it a school, because you weren't really running a school. It was called WrestlePlex. It was right down the damn street from where you were. Run me through that. What was why? Why did you do that in the first place?
The number one reason was I was backing down on independent shows. I was in a place where, like, I was, you know, often one of the better guys on the show, and, you know, working these shows for $40 and wrestling people I don't know and risking injury. Like, I mean, that was a time in my life where I was basically invincible, but I certainly didn't want to get hurt making no money and not getting better. And it was just a way for me to have a ring so I could be in the ring several times a week. It's something that I think I've always been passionate about, and kind of passing that knowledge. And I don't even know if at that point I was good enough to even run a wrestling school, but I had very good success. It wasn't around for a long period of time, but, you know, I mean, as a lot of people know, trained Sean Spears, Ty Dillinger, whatever you want to call them, trained Crazy Steve, trained Jake O'Reilly, trained a bunch of people, Chris Chambers and Ashley Six and Mike Petticombe, and a bunch of guys that are still doing it and doing it at a high level independently as well. So for me, it was just to have a ring. I like doing it. And I was backing down on shows, but wanted to be crisp because I was doing a bunch of tryouts with the WWF, WWE at the time, and TNA Wrestling. And just, I didn't want to get rusty, but I certainly didn't want to work some 300-pound slob that doesn't know what he's doing and have him drop me under my head or get hurt doing something like that. So,
like me.
Well, I mean, you may have been close to 300 pounds, but you certainly weren't a slob.
So you open up this place and you're doing these tryouts, and then all of a sudden you're like, you know what? F the world. I'm moving to the States. And you did it in a weird, like, old school way, because does it still happen where it's like, I'm going to go to the States and I'm going to find somebody down there that can help me out, right? Walk me through.
So I think it does happen. It is a crazy story. And I mean, I got a lot of crazy stories, but it's a really wild one. And I think when I tell people it sounds made up, but I was dating one of the cage dancers from TNA Wrestling. I had done a bunch of independents down here in Tennessee and had done a couple of tryouts that we kind of met through other people. And we were chatting on the phone and hanging out. And when I would come down to Nashville, I'd hang out with her, and she traveled sometimes for work and would come up to Detroit, and I'd go over and see her. And we certainly weren't at a place where we were going to be married. And it started as a joke from her. And, you know, why don't you just marry me? And then you can be down here, you know, kind of full time. And, and then 3 months later, I walked with picture perfect Marco Malachias to Scotiabank and sold my house to him for $1, closed my wrestling school, quit my job, packed my wrestling gear and some of my clothes and my car, and moved to the United States and left everything. So, I mean, I'm sitting here and had a had a very successful run, got a couple of good years left, I think, and all worth it. But I mean, there was no guarantee. Like I know that TNA was interested, the WWF at the time and WWE was interested. And I was just trying to make it easier for them to say yes. So,
and so it ends up that you end up signing with TNA first, that first run, whatever. Right. And that was, if I'm not mistaken, that was Jeff Jarrett era.
Yep. Yep.
Relationship with Jeff. How did that hit off? Because I know some stories already, but you know, it was a good dream.
Yeah, very, very good. We kind of hit it off right away. We're very close friends right away. We're still very friendly today and talk, and not like we did, but you know, like I would spend hours with him in the hospital when his wife Jo was passing away, and you know, just being around to be around him and be around his kids and stuff like that. So we're very close at one point. But yeah, I mean, you know, obviously Scott D'Amore had a lot to do with that. Well, he was a producer there and kind of stuck his neck out for me. And nobody makes it, you know, without someone going to bat for you. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, it's just the reality. It's a who knows you and who you know kind of business, and that will never change. So having people on my side that way was great. But yeah, me and Jeff hit it off great right away. Mike Tenay was a huge part of the writing group, and Vince Russo, who guys I still talk to this day, not as often as we probably should or as I'd like, but yeah, still very friendly with them.
Now it's funny you say it, because I've always said the same thing. It's not necessarily who you know or who knows you, it's who's willing to say they know right. You. Yeah. That's really the big thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
So TNA, you have a huge run. You end up doing some of the craziest stuff just in TNA alone on this first run, right? Like you were Super Eric. Yeah. You were hunting for Elvis at some point. You too many concussions, handicap character, all of these comedy characters that you were doing. Was that always something like in your mind? I think I know the answer, but I want to hear, like, is that always something in your mind that you wanted to do?
No. I mean, I think you know me well enough. And like, you know, like there was lots of guys in Ontario at the time when I was breaking in that were very good. But if I wasn't one of, if not the best guy in Ontario at the time, I mean, you could point him out to me. And that's not, I'm not trying to toot my horn. I mean, I'm not good at anything. I barely made it here on time. But I mean, pro wrestling, I've always been able to do, and I've been good at it right away. I was good at it. It's the only time in my life I can say I was good at something right away. And it was, luckily, it was this thing that I loved the most.
So your first run of TNA, how hard, I mean, obviously adoration, your love being there. How hard was it for you to make the decision to leave that first time?
Yeah, it was both times that I left. It was hard. You know, the first
we'll get into the second one in a minute.
Yeah, the first one was difficult because it was all I knew, right? Like that's where I became who I was in the wrestling world. It's where I grew up. It's where I became a man, and you know, it's where I was working when I met my wife, and all of these things, all these milestones. I was world champion and tag champion and ex champion and women's tag champion and you know, global champion and TV champion and all, I mean, all of it. So it's all my firsts were done there. And that's, you know, there's a lot to say that. It was just kind of like, I felt at the time, one, the WWE, WWF was always my goal. Like TNA didn't exist when I started really training and whatever. It didn't come around until years later. So it was never on the radar. Obviously when it opened, it was like, man, it's another place for me to go and get on TV and say that I do this for a living. So it became a real thing after it started becoming, you know, a real product. But WWE was always the goal. And, you know, illegally or legally, I don't know, they pursued me. And it just was, the truth is, I think, you know, financially, I probably took a pay cut to go to NXT, which is a wild thing to say. Because I think me, Bobby, Joe, Austin Aries, and Drew McIntyre were the highest paid guys there at the time. But I was doing very well at Impact at the time, and also being able to do independence and kind of do whatever I want. But, you know, it was a bet on yourself. And plus, like, that was a goal that I wanted to check off of my list. You know, that was really my only goal when I first started, was to work for the WWF. And it was definitely was not an easy decision. But at that time, how it was being run and these groups of tapings, it was grueling and the numbers were dwindling, and we were being moved around on television from Spike to Destination America. You know, there's no hit on anybody that was there or running it or Dixie or any of that thing. It just was time for me to go. And that doesn't mean that it was easy, because that was my home, you know, and all the people I knew and, you know, was close to basically work there. So, but, you know, it was a big deal being able to go over there with Bobby Roode at the same time. Obviously knew Drew pretty well, was very close with Joe and with Austin Aries. So all of us going at the same time was kind of a cool thing. And at the time, like, there was nothing hotter in the wrestling world than NXT, not nothing. Yeah. So, you know, you're stepping into this just unbelievable opportunity.
So you go there, you end up in a faction doing the Sanity thing, killer run in NXT. Right. And like the goal for everybody, it seems like, get moved up, get called up to SmackDown and Raw. And that's the thing. But they didn't call everybody up.
Yep.
Right. Why was that? First of all, I was always curious.
Well, I mean, there's only so much room. Right. And I mean, they've employed hundreds of people that you will never see or hear. Right. Maybe thousands at this point. And at the time, like NXT, like I said, it was, you know, like Adam Cole and, you know, Andrade and Gargano and Ciampa and Bobby Roode and Shinsuke and Joe. And like, I mean, it's the Mecca.
Yeah.
You know, those tickets sold out instantaneously. Obviously there's not, you know, 90,000 people at them. They're working at their, you know, the arena at Barclays, or they're at the, you know, the Orlando Magic Arena in Orlando, or wherever Mania or SummerSlam or whatever happened to be. But those tickets sold out first. I mean, they were the hottest ticket in pro wrestling to get. And being on those shows, there was something special there. And I think you're starting to see that again there, which is great for wrestling. It's great for wrestlers and great for the WWE. And when the WWE does well, surprise, everybody does well. It's just how it goes. The high tide raises all boats. But the Sanity thing I loved, it was, you know, after talking with Hunter, is he saw me cut this promo. I was feuding with Bobby Roode at the time, and I was a heel, and I'm screaming and like spits flying out of my mouth. And he was like, Sanity had been kind of this idea that he'd been sitting on. And he said, that's the guy that I want to lead this group. And that was like a huge honor for me. One, I mean, the fact that he watched it all, right? I mean, one of the busiest human beings on earth, but in the end, that's part of his job, you know, to know. And he knew, and they hired me, and right away was in such a cool position. And you know, one of my favorite wrestling memories is, I mean, there's no secret, I'm, you know, a massive Shawn Michaels guy. I was writing articles at the time for ESPN, and I wrote an article about my love for him and how our lives intersected. And he has no idea that it happened, but I'm very, very memorable for me. And one of my very first pay-per-views, I was wrestling Sean Spears, a kid I trained in San Antonio, and our producer for that match was Shawn Michaels, and he almost cried. He liked it so much. And that's insane, right? It's just insane. So being able to work with him and work, you know, really hands-on with the music and the entrance and the feel of it. And they let me say how things that they wanted said my own way. And yeah, was just treated with complete respect by Triple H and by everybody there. And I loved it. And the truth is, I didn't really want to leave, but that was the goal, right? The goal was to go to the main roster.
Right. Now, do you think Sanity ran its course, or did something stop it?
No. Well, I mean, I'm not a gambling person, but if there's only one person on earth that didn't get it, and that was the only person that mattered. So,
right.
That was the bridge we crossed, and we found out, you know, the hard way. And people are like, you know, are you mad? Are you bitter? Like, I'm disappointed. You know, I'm disappointed in how that went. You know, all my blood, sweat, and tears of my life was poured into that. A lot of hard work by everybody in Sanity, Axel and Damo and Nikki and Fulton and, you know, everybody. And the people that we worked with worked really hard to make this a real thing, like Tag Team of the Year, Match of the Year. Like, it was red hot. I mean, red hot. and they just drop the ball. And like, you know, I always say, I'm not the first person he's missed on, and I'm certainly won't be the last, you know. And Kenny Omega didn't last 8 months. He's one of the best to ever do it, period, the end. So, you know, right. It's an unfortunate truth. And in the end, it came down to one person didn't understand it. And that's the only person that mattered at the time.
And for those of you that don't know, we're obviously talking about Vince, right? The guy who just
I'm not allowed to say his name.
I know. I can say. Come
out. Say whatever you want.
And then you end up going back. Like obviously you're fired. There's some free agency stuff going around. You end up going back to TNA. Obviously, the return was very amicable. There was no problems or anything like that. And you start up a whole new faction, right? You start up the Violent by Design faction with Cody and Joe Doring. Yep. And what was the – was that your idea? Was that somebody else's?
No, I think me and Scott had kind of talked about there being a group, and there was a bunch of ideas thrown around. At first, I was just kind of on my own. You know, I mean, I kind of like came out in a babyface way, but this is during COVID, so there's no fans. So, right. I mean, it was a wild time for everybody. And but by the end of the match, I turn into a heel, and then I kind of go on this pretty dominant run. I end up beating Eddie Edwards for the world title, and then I have the belt for almost, I mean, at least 6 months, maybe closer to 9 months, and then end up dropping it to Rich. But in between that time, you know, kind of surrounding myself with these like-minded people, and Big Joe Doring was always going to be in the group. A guy that I've known forever. I never worked closely with, but a guy that, I mean, I absolutely love. And I don't know if he even watches or hears any of this, and just know I love you, man. And I hope you're feeling better. And obviously Cody Deaner, a person I've known for over 25 years. And I wanted him in the group. He was kind of languishing. And I thought there was this really kind of cool full circle storytelling where like Eric Young could see himself in Cody. He's this comedy guy, you know, being bullied and pushed around, but he's really this other thing that I know. Cause I broke in with him in Ontario, and Ontario, he's one of the top guys. I mean, he's Scott world champion for Motor City, right? I mean, he's this other thing everywhere else except for DNA. So it's this kind of like cool real life but not real life story where we know each other and I see myself in him and want to rescue him from being ordinary kind of thing. And yeah, and Violent by Design was obviously very involved with all of it, you know, the promos and the imagery, and you know, through Robert, the one of the writers here who I worked with Insanity at NXT, and Eric Tompkins, the head of production here, who he's just a god, right? Just a wizard at what he does. And Scott was very good at putting people in positions and saying, this is what you're good at, so do these things. And that's, I mean, from top to bottom at TNA Wrestling, right? There's not a lot of us, and there's probably lots of people being underpaid and overworked. But the truth is it looks as good as it is and is as well received as it is because there's all these hardworking, brilliant people working to put it together. And the Violent by Design thing, I think it's a bold statement, and it's pretty recent, but I would say it's probably my favorite time in my career.
Even after you got murdered?
Even after I got murdered, I got to come back, and there was nothing cooler.
I want to know whose idea it is to kill everybody off in TNA, and whose was it to murder you?
It's happened several times, right? Like, I'm certainly not the only one.
How come nobody's called to the office or called to the police station? There's a lot of wrestlers dying in TNA, bro.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. The murder does seem to be a real problem there. But it's, I think it was kind of a brainchild of Eric Tompkins is how it ended is we're shooting in this like kind of jailhouse set where we shot a lot of the promos. And Cody definitely, like, there's the illusion. One, you can't show him stabbing me because it's cable television.
Yeah.
And also, there's no thought or even thought or idea that I'm going to come back, right? Like, I'm leaving. I've signed this 4-year deal, and I'm going to that's going to be it, right, kind of thing. But they still leave it open-ended because he's an artist, I guess. I don't know. I don't have the forethought, to be honest. Right. But when I said, you know, I think that this is happening and I'm coming back, and he goes, oh, we can do this and we can do that. And just, he had it in his head before I'd even signed my name on a contract. So it's, you know, I've talked about him 100 times, but people aren't talking about Eric Tompkins enough in the pro wrestling world. I mean, they're just not. He's one of the best at what he does. He is a great dude, a great human being, a good father, a good husband, good friend. But most of all, loves pro wrestling and cares about it with his entire soul. And it's, and you can see it, you know, like he's doing stuff with little to no money.
But then you decided to get murdered and forego all of that and decide to go back to the stupid ex-girlfriend, so to speak. Right. Yeah. For whatever reason, when you were down there the second time, did you even work?
I didn't. No, I actually never left my house. It's, I mean, the whole story is wild. Again, I had to sign an NDA.
Absolutely.
And I'm not allowed to say names. The truth is I don't need to talk badly on it. Like, sure. You know, it is what it is. And yep. I talked to Hunter, and he hired me back and wanted me back there. And I was, and another person came back, and I won't work for that person. I won't be around that person. And I said that when I left there the first time when I got fired, and I meant it. And, you know, for me, there's tons of professional reasons, but mostly it's a personal and moral decision. Is I don't have to be there. I have a very good life outside of there. And there's no doubt it's the pinnacle of sports entertainment. There's no, like we just saw this weekend. I mean, I don't know if it could be more perfect, you know, to be honest. It's the big fish in the pond. And no one will say that. I will never change my mind on it. That was my goal. I went there and I had a bunch of cool things. I was hired back there to do something very cool, and it just didn't work out. And in the end, I was going to be forced to compromise who I am as a person and as a man. And I'm not willing to do that. And it's not lost on me that I was able to make that choice, because a lot of people aren't going to get that choice, right? You're going to make decisions, and you're going to be forced to do what you got to do. If this was 10 or 15 years ago, I wouldn't have been able to make that choice.
Do you think that not enough people live off of their morals inside of professional wrestling?
No, I think it's each person's journey is their own, man. And I'm not going to name names, but I had, you know, 20 or 30 people that work there currently that said, like, it's just such an unbelievable choice, and it's such a leader thing to do. Like, I'm doing it out of completely selfish reasons for myself and myself only. I'm not doing it to punish somebody. I'm not doing it to prove a point. I'm doing it because that's what I said when I got fired. And that was not the case when I resigned, because I wouldn't have.
Right.
And then everything changed. I mean, in the end, I guess you could say jokes on me, because I got that person's not around anymore. And I'm willing to believe. I'm not willing to believe. I can give you 1,000% guarantee. I wanted to work there. I could.
Right.
It's just at this point in my life, I'm just not interested, man. I believe in what I'm doing. And that's worth more than almost anything to me right now. And it has nothing to do disparaging anything that goes on there. I still talk to Hunter this day. We're still buddies. I still have utmost respect for him and 95% of the people that work there, and especially the people that make the show go. And that's the people in the ring. And if that's what you want to do, and that's your decision, then that's your decision. It was never about being a leadership or proof of point or that. I think some people took it that way, and some people, man, it's, you know, it's really cool. In the end, it was a selfish reason, because I couldn't live with myself. Right. It's just as simple as that. I made a promise to myself and I kept it.
And then you end up going back to TNA, and there's, you know, well, there was Impact, and they're doing the switch, and then boom, right after the switch, some of the biggest news in, you know, Impact/TNA/Anthem history is they end up letting Scott go, a guy who has been the face, the staple, the glue, whatever you want to, you know, call it to TNA wrestling. Walk me through a little bit what was going through your mind when all of that was going down.
yeah, obviously a shock. And, you know, I've said this in other things. And Scott D'Amore is one of my dear friends. I had 30 people at my wedding, and he was one of them. And I've known him for over 30 years. And my friendship with him and my care for him and my love for him will never change, no matter what position he's in or any of that, right? That's got nothing to do with it. This is real life. Obviously, I knew long before a lot of people knew. At the time, I was shocked. You know, I just shocked. I mean, like you said, the glue or whatever. TNA is not in the position that it's in now if it wasn't for Scott D'Amore. There's nobody more important over the last decade to its well-being, its resurgence, and its overall health than Scott D'Amore. I still believe he's one of the best in that position. I still think he could be doing it. That's a position that I'm not asked to make that decision. I can tell you that the people that are making the decisions now have been respectful, have been kind, have listened to things that I've had to say. Whether they follow through on those things, I don't know. And I'm not afraid to say those things. Me and them have a very open communication. And I would say things have gone as well as they could be at this point. But it was a massive shock to me. And a massive shock to the roster and all the stuff that happened after, and felt like the Dutch boy in the dam there for a little while, me and Frankie and a couple of the guys. Like, I've been through 10 or 12 of these, right? Where leadership there changes. Yeah. But a lot of the people that are there, like a lot of the roster have, Scott's been the only person they've ever worked for. I get it. And a lot of people took it personally. I took it personally too. But in the end, it's business. I'll just say this is, it was a massive shock. I was very let down by the decision, but over time have come to see that, it's what they believe is right. And in the end, they're the ones paying the bills, and they're the ones with their hands on the pulse of analytics and business expenditures and all this other stuff. I don't know that stuff. I don't concern myself with those things because it's got nothing to do with me. I got no say in any of that. Right. I show up on time to work. They give me what I'm going to do, and I nail that as hard as I can and work myself to the bone that day, and then come back and do it the next day. That's what I can control. And I think, as you get older, you realize you can just control the things that you can control. I can't control that. And if I could, Scott would still be in charge.
And there you have it. Huge thanks again to Chris Tidwell and Eric Young. And again, you can catch the full-length interview on this week's Live Audio Wrestling, which you can find here on the SNME Network of Podcasts. And for that, all you need to do is go to your favorite podcasting app and search for Sunday Night's Main Event. All right, we're going to be taking a short break here on TSN Radio and the iHeartRadio News Talk Networks. And when we come back, Xavier Josiah and myself are going to be previewing AEW Dynasty. So leave it locked in here on Sunday Night's Main Event.
Chat wrestling all week long by joining the Sunday Night's Main Event group on Facebook. Just search SNME Radio.
Hello, special friends. You can catch Greg and Brad, your Smack Daddies, each weekend on the SNME Radio Network.
We cover our lives, what's happening on the East Coast, and eventually cover SmackDown.
Check us out each week at SundayNightsMainEvent.com.
Please subscribe to get your Smack Daddies and the rest of the SNME Radio Network content directly to your podcatcher for less than $1 a week.
We the ones!
This is Sunday Night's Main Event on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
We are back here on TSN Radio and the iHeartRadio News Talk Networks, and you're listening to Sunday Night's Main Event. And next Sunday, AEW is presenting their next pay-per-view, which is entitled Dynasty. And so far, we have quite a few matches to discuss, and here to discuss the matches and preview AEW Dynasty with me is my All Elite Geekly co-host, Dax Xavier Josiah. Dax, welcome back to TSN Radio.
Hey, how's it going, people? How's it going, wrestling fans? I'm ready. I'm really ready for this pay-per-view. Starting to liven up, if you will.
Yeah, after last night's collision, I think that they did a great job of, you know, focusing on their own product. And when they focus on their own product, they do great stuff. And that's how I felt. Like, I'm back on the hype train with this pay-per-view. So, obviously, I'm going to ask you, you're looking forward to it. But the real measure, will you be buying the pay-per-view?
Yeah, I'm definitely checking it out. I mean, just when they first announced Danielson versus Ospreay, I was just like, all right, you could take my money now. And I was skeptical, but then they threw that match in. I'm like, there's no way I can miss this. There's just absolutely no way.
Yep, exactly. That's kind of how I feel. And I think that after the stipulation for the tag team title match was announced, I think a lot of people are going to be
buying that one too. Interview.
So let us go through the card. We will preview things and set you up so that we are ready to discuss AEW Dynasty. Just remember that here on the network, we're going to be having a live after party immediately after the pay-per-view hosted by Matthew and Aaron Grant, hosts of the Collision Catch-Up. All right, Dax, let's start with some trios action. Adam Copeland, Mark Briscoe, and Eddie Kingston versus House of Blacks, Malakai Black, Buddy Matthews, and Brody King.
Is that the opener, first of all?
Who knows at this point what the match order is, but we usually learn the day of the pay-per-view.
Right. Either way, I feel like it's going to be a definite solid match. I think that will be a great opener to start it off. I think they're going to you got really great athletes that are going to be in here just having a big chaotic fight going on here. So I'm expecting some great things going on with that match.
Yeah, same here. This is going to, like, just a lot of big people who want to prove something. You know, House of Black gets a lot of flack in among the internet wrestling community. Adam Copeland right now is out there to prove something. Mark Briscoe and Eddie Kingston always give it a 10. So this match, I think, is just going to be just brutal, fun, and very entertaining. All right. We talked about this before. Let's talk about it right now. Bryan Danielson versus Will Ospreay in this should be dubbed Who is Best in the World match. But I'm really looking forward to this match. How about you, Dex?
Oh, again, it was the reason. I'm Fry from Futurama saying, shut up and take my money. That was the match. It's definitely going to do it. I expect this to possibly be I'd be really surprised if this is not a candidate for a match of the year and added into the list of matches of the year. Like, I don't expect nothing but extremely over-the-top, collegiate, athletic, you know, wonders from these two. So it's almost just unless something dramatic happens, I would be surprised if this doesn't, you know, take the night.
Yep, agreed with you. This one should be match of the night and contender for match of the year. And, you know, I kind of hate hyping up a match this way, but sometimes when you look at the competitors, you look at Danielson, you look at Ospreay, you're fairly confident in the statements that we're making right now. We're not saying anything too crazy. All right.
Right. That body of work has spoken for themselves.
Exactly. A match that has been built up fairly well in the division that usually takes a backseat to AEW, which is the women's division. And this match, I'm curious to see who's going to win this match and face Mercedes Moné at Double or Nothing in May. And that match is Julie Hart versus Willow Nightingale for the TBS title.
I think this is actually going to be a surprisingly solid match. And I think we are expected to see some changes.
Yeah, I that's what I'm thinking. I think we're on the path for Willow Nightingale versus Mercedes Moné in some shape, way, or form, a rematch of their match for the New Japan Strong Women's title, which injured Moné. So I think that's the collision course. That's the path that we're in. All right, for the AEW Continental title, your champion, Kazuchika Okada versus Pac.
I mean, come on, man. This is like, how do I'm not going to get this pay-per-view? you already just listed off like five matches, but three of them are like easily could possibly be, you know, match of the year contentions. This is another one. This is speed versus precision. You know, God, and two other, you got one of the considered the best of the world, and you got this guy who just very quickly rapid and piercing when it comes to his fighting ability. This is going to be an awesome match.
Yeah, this is going to be a great one. This is, again, like, you know, Pac, he's in and out of AEW because of injury, visa issues, etc. Yeah. And you have Okada, who's just, you know, this is his new home. And again, this match on paper should be very good. All right, another match that we alluded to earlier, a ladder match and the finals for the AEW World Tag Team Championship, the Young Bucks versus FTR.
Again, okay, now we got number four.
I know.
Okay, so basically, like, they didn't need a ladder match to make this match awesome. They can, no matter what they do, and whatever they have done in the past has always been awesome, but adding the ladder is going to make it that much better. And this can be, I hate to call this a sleeper, but these two work together extremely well. So, I mean, when you look at it, this card, period, this is going to be questionable for you. Like, if it goes from start to finish really solid, might be questioned into, you know, event of the year.
Yeah. As look, we talk about All Elite Week, AEW on our show, All Elite Geekly, every Thursday morning here on the network. And look, we've been hyping up the matches. We've been talking about the stories, but actually looking at the card up and down, you're like, man, they've built out a really good card. And you're right. You know what? This Young Bucks FTR match doesn't need the ladder match. But I think that this is all four guys' way of saying to everyone, let's put on an amazing show and focus on our product.
Agreed. And you know what's crazy? Six matches that we just talked about, four of them could have been a main event in their own pay-per-view.
Yeah. That's
enough said.
Look, that's the beauty of AEW pay-per-views, right? Or just pay-per-views in general, even WWE. At their lowest, their pay-per-views were at least somewhat entertaining. You know, there were more hits than misses. So, you know, that's the thing about pay-per-views and or PLEs and pay-per-views in this day and age, right? That the companies are giving us just gems on paper, and most of the time they deliver. All right, a match that was really hyped well last night because of one of the contenders' amazing promos on Collision for the AEW Women's World Title, Timeless Toni Storm versus Thunder Rosa. Man, that promo hyped me. That Thunder Rosa promo on Collision hyped me for this match.
And I tell you, I texted you last night when I was watching it, and I was like, this is the best Thunder Rosa. Like, it was, I called it scary emotional.
Yeah.
It felt so real. It felt right straight to the heart. I empathized with her struggle to be back at the top of where she was. She made me believe, and it really ignited my fire to want to see this match now.
Yep. Yeah, this match is going to be, and again, right, like Timeless Toni Storm, you forget how good of a wrestler she is because the character work is kind of overshadows it right now, but there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that, but like, you know that when she has to go, she can go. We know Thunder Rosa can go. I'm really looking forward to this match, and this next match, the main event, Swerve Strickland, Samoa Joe, for the AEW World Championship. Dax, is this Swerve Strickland finishing his story?
This needs to be his moment. This needs to be his Cody moment, man. Like, it has to happen. This is one of those, if you don't strike while the iron's hot, I'm afraid of what's going to happen with Swerve up to this point. It has to happen. And they've done a great job with the storytelling leading up to this point. There's nothing else to say to it, but it has to happen.
Yep. Look, with Swerve getting the upper hand on Joe, not once but twice this week, I have a feeling that Joe's going to be getting, you know, his upper hand this week. And, you know, in the past, at least, wrestling tells us that whoever has the upper hand before the big match is going to lose that match. So
I know. I mean, there's a lot of things that goes into our theories of how this, of the formulaic things that happen in wrestling. New gear, new entrance, new music is usually an indication of something that's usually going to happen. And yeah, and the back and forth of the story does play a factor sometimes. This is going to be interesting. Now, AEW is known for flipping the script a little bit. So, I mean, who knows when it case, but yeah, let's see what happens. But either way, I can guarantee we're going to have a great match from that for those two as well.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to this. And like you said, I'm hoping that Swerve Strickland gets that title. They need to do it right now that he's on such a hot streak. I think Samoa Joe had a great run to kind of get the company back to where it needed to get to. But I think that, for lack of a better term, a new era for AEW will be on Swerve Strickland.
You know how much of a fan I am of Samoa Joe, man. Like, I I've said it before on All Elite Geekly. Like, my first Ring of Honor event was the debut of Samoa Joe in 22 or 23, actually, I think.
2002.
It was 2002. Well, yeah. It was Fight Without Honor. It was 2022. Yeah. You're right. And I mean, 2002. And he's just been insanely amazing. That title run that he had in Ring of Honor is legendary. And I would love for him to have that too, but there's too many factors coming in, and Swerve is one of them. And a lot of it is due to the stuff that he did leading to all these people being inspired by his run, by his entire journey. So now you got a bunch of caliber wrestlers, fighting to be in his spot, to be that dude. So the torch has to be passed, and I think he respectfully will honor that. No pun intended.
Exactly. All right, you look at the color scheme for AEW Dynasty, you look at everything, and a lot of signs point to a possible return, appearance, something of MJF. Do you think we're going to be getting MJF at this pay-per-view?
It would be awesome to get him back. It's long overdue, in my opinion. Even if they don't, I don't think it's going to hurt the pay-per-view, but it'll just be an added bonus, in my opinion.
Here's the one thing. If he shows up, don't ruin Sir Strickland's moment.
I agree. If he comes back, it can't be tied with them because he still has some issues with the Undisputed Kingdom. So if he comes back, I would hope that is somewhere connected to that storyline and not Swerve and Joe. Because, I mean, yeah, he has issues with Joe too, but it also factors into the situation of Adam Cole. So let's hope that if he comes back, that is based on that, and that's it. And exactly. I agree. Don't interfere with the Swerve possible win.
Yep, exactly. So this pay-per-view, AEW Dynasty, happened in April 21st, 8 p.m. And just remember, immediately after the pay-per-view, we are going to be going live on YouTube, Facebook, X, with the Grants, chatting all things AEW Dynasty. Xavier, Dax, thank you, as always. And remember to catch us on All Elite Geekly this Thursday. But unfortunately, we have been chatting and having fun for an hour, so it is time to go. Just remember, thank you so much for listening to Sunday Night's Main Event, powered by Live Audio Wrestling, The Law. Join Brady Whittem and Chris Tidwell as they navigate through the world of pro wrestling and MMA, and you can listen to them on the Sunday Night's Main Event Podcast Network. Just search for Sunday Night's Main Event on your favorite podcasting app. Thank you so much for supporting the show each and every single week. If you want to be part of the family and keep the lights on, all you need to do is go to patreon.com/snmeradio. And for $5 a month, you join the family. And you, too, can be part of the trivia games and so much more. That's patreon.com/snmeradio. We're also on all of the social networks. And for that, all you need to do is follow us on Instagram, X, or whatever social network you like, including YouTube, and search for the @SNME Radio username on all of the platforms. We also have some merchandise, and that's another great way that you can help support the show, and that's by going to Chop Tees. Chop Tees is the home for so many brands, including Sunday Night's Main Event, Poison Rana, Post Wrestling, and so many more. That's chopped-tees.com. We're even on Facebook. We have Facebook conversations each and every single day. And for that, just go to Facebook.com and search for SNME Radio. And like I said, we're more than just a weekly wrestling show. If you want all of the news, there's so much news. Really, there's so much news. There's way too much of news. So all we have a supporting crew and supporting podcasts that take care of all of that. And if you want to listen to all of their views and show reviews and so much more, you find the Sunday Night's Main Event Podcast Network by going to your favorite podcasting app and searching for Sunday Night's Main Event. Once again, thank you so much for listening. So without further ado, thank you so much for listening here on TSN Radio and the iHeartRadio News Talk Networks. Take care. Thank you. But most importantly, stay tranquilo.
Thanks for finding Sunday Night's Main Event. To get the complete show as well as bonus weekly podcasts, please join our Patreon at patreon.com/SNME Radio.